Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Walt Whitman once said, "But for opera, I would never have written Leaves of Grass." But opera was hardly the only music that inspired the Brooklyn-born poet to write this collection of 12 poems. This year marks the 150th anniversary of Leaves of Grass, and WNYC is celebrating with an hour-long special called Walt Whitman, Song of Myself. It airs this Thursday at 9 a.m. on our AM station. And right after Soundcheck, here at 93.9. And joining us today to look at Whitman's relationship to music is Karen Carboner, professor of humanities at NYU. She edited the Barnes & Noble edition of Leaves of Grass. Karen, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
When Walt Whitman says, "But for opera, I would never have written Leaves of Grass," what do you think he meant by that?
Well, I think he's reacting to the craze for opera that was existing at the time, right at the seed time of Leaves of Grass. You had the opera take off in New York as it never had been taken off before.
So would this have been the 1840s or 50s, something like that?
Late 1840s, early 1850s. P.T. Barnum brought in Jenny Lind, and she was a sensation, made him millions of dollars. And Whitman was one of the people that was there at the performance. He had favorite mezzo-sopranos. Marietta Alboni wrote poems about them. They profoundly influenced his poetry. And what's interesting about that is supposedly Whitman was tone deaf. He used to belt out tunes at the top of his lungs, riding the omnibus up and down Broadway, but had absolutely no sense of music or tone. He just really enjoyed the performance of it.
So you mean he couldn't sing? I mean, if he was right. Tone deaf, I don't think he would have been so keen on the opera. But all right, so not a singer, but a poet whose music, you know, came out in a different form as poetry. Why is Leaves of Grass, this collection of poems that seems to have grown with Whitman's own life, why was it such a landmark?
Well, there are so many things going on. I mean, first of all, just to tie it in with what we were saying about opera, Whitman absorbs and translates everything that's going on during his time period. So rather than this work existing in a bubble, you have a man who's becoming the interpreter of American pop culture. That's why we love Leaves of Grass still. It's vibrant. It captures the interests of the people at the time, what they were reading, what they were going to see. And you can take a cue from the first song. That's a good mistake. The first poem in Leaves of Grass, which is called "Song of Myself." I mean, he very much wanted to bounce off the page. And as someone who's living in the city at a time when New York is becoming a great metropolis, there's lots of sound, action, different types of people. He's really trying to synthesize all of that into this great democratic work.
So it isn't just opera, but it's also the songs that people were singing on the street at the time that
absolutely
that inspired him.
Yeah, he's very much into kind of street culture. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people believe that his absorption of the street culture is something that even contemporary musicians really appreciate and hear in his poetry.
Karen Carboner is actually one of the people whose voice can be heard in the WNYC special, Walt Whitman, Song of Myself. Let's hear a clip from that special, and it sort of talks to this subject.
When it came to music, Whitman favored American songwriters like Stephen Foster. He preferred the simplicity of what he called heart singing over European art singing. But he changed his tune in the 1840s, after one type of exotic European music took New York by storm. Without it, Whitman said he could not have written Leaves of Grass.
Oh!
opera, Whitman found the same fire, energy, and emotional abandon that he loved in Junius Brutus Booth's acting. In fact, the only performer who meant more to him was Marietta Alboni, an Italian contralto with a passionate following among workers as well as opera connoisseurs.
That's the voice of poet Carl Hancock Rux, the host of WNYC's Walt Whitman, Song of Myself, produced by Curtis Fox and airing this Thursday. We're speaking with Karen Carpenter, who edited the Barnes & Noble edition of Leaves of Grass and has co-curated the ongoing exhibition about Walt Whitman at the South Street Seaport. And it's telling that the contralto that he liked was someone who was a favorite of the workers.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be, you know, par for the course for Walt Whitman.
Absolutely. And just as we heard, Whitman had this divided interest in heart singing, which is a profoundly American tradition based on these family singing groups that were touring at the time. But there was nothing quite as three-dimensional as opera. So hearing Marietta Alboni going to the opera, seeing performance, hearing music, the story, there was nothing quite like that. It really captured his imagination.
So the idea of the opera aria, and perhaps even more than the aria, the recitative, the sort of recited
right.
passage that precedes it, would you hear any echo of that?
Oh, yeah. There are some poems where he uses italics. Whitman was trained as a printer, so he often uses print to indicate meaning. And in Out of the Cradle, Endlessly Rocking, one of his big poems, also in When Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloomed, which is his great Lincoln elegy, he uses italics and regular type to indicate recitatif and aria. So he's very much thinking along these lines, always wanting to, again, bounce off the page, make it something that you can hear and experience, just like the opera that he loved so much.
Mm. I guess one of the ironies is that for a poet whose work was so distinctly American, it seems to be the European composers who were the first to kind of adopt his poetry as inspiration for music.
Yeah, that's really true. Although we tend to forget some of the American musics that were happening at the time. And Whitman was there when the Jim Crow shows came around in New York. And even though they were racist and often terrifying, they were the basis for sort of bringing black music to white middle-class listeners. And he was there and even wrote in an essay called An American Primer that he thought that the black voice was the part of the music of the future. So it's not just he really loved opera as an experience, but he's also reacting very powerfully to the different types of musics. Like I said, this family singing tradition, which became prevalent during the Civil War. In the tents, they used to tour, and Whitman loved not only what they represented, but what they would sing about, these profoundly democratic themes.
Right. So why do you have to go across the Atlantic to find the first really successful classical settings of Whitman?
I hate to say it, but America really didn't appreciate Whitman when he came out. He pretty much died a poor man in Camden, New Jersey. Had a lot of European admirers come over. There were some Americans starting to appreciate him. But a lot of us chalk it up to just him being ahead of his time and Victorian America just not being ready for someone who says, I hear the trained soprano, she convulses me like the climax of my love grip, which is a line in, that's his reaction to opera, you
uh-huh.
know, and still today you laugh and it's, my students blush too at this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, among the composers who set Walt Whitman was the English composer Ralph Vaughan Williams. Here's a little bit of his cantata setting called Dona Nobis Pacem. That's music by Ray Vaughan Williams, text by Walt Whitman, beat, beat drums, and part of the cantata known as Dona Nobis Pacem. It seems like wartime in Europe, and after all, almost every time was wartime in Europe in those days, was a good chance for these composers to look to Walt Whitman.
Absolutely, and Beat Drums Beat comes from Drum Taps, which is a Civil War poetry series. Whitman volunteered as a Civil War nurse. He was too old to fight. And while he was down on the front, he wrote poetry. And a lot of people find this particular series, Drum Taps, to be profoundly moving and actually very relevant today, too.
So it's not just whatever rhythm there is in the language, the music of the poetry itself. It's the content as well as the form that seems to attract people.
I think that's really true. And you find different people coming to Whitman for different reasons. He's politically, socially radical, which attracts a great crowd, including people like great poets like Hughes and Langston Hughes and Allen Ginsberg and Frank O'Hara. But there's also this profoundly democratic vision of America as a place of promise. Mm-hmm. And you hear this in Drum Taps, and you hear it also in some of the later poems.
Was Walt Whitman the first poet to really, if not explicitly, at least to strongly imply a homosexual element in his work?
It's a very interesting case. The word homosexual is not invented yet.
Right.
And you could say that without the invention of that word, there really is no identification of a community. But throughout Whitman's work, you do sense, especially in the Calamus series, that there is a homoerotic content. Mm-hmm. They're quite beautiful. And he's always making an effort to not conform to any one thing. So just as you might hear a homoerotic content in Calamus, there's a juxtaposing cluster of poems called Children of Adam. And as the name implies, procreation, heterosexual love is the theme of that.
All right. We're speaking with Karen Carpenter, who is professor of humanities at NYU, edited the Barnes & Noble edition of Leaves of Grass. Let's hear a little bit more of this WNYC documentary, Walt Whitman's Song of Myself. You mentioned, Karen, that different composers come to him for different reasons.
Right.
Ned Roram, a composer for whom gay themes have often been a point of attraction. John Adams, drawn to the Civil War poetry. Here's a little bit from both of them.
Composer Ned Roram.
Whitman belongs to me, and I sort of therefore resent all these other settings of Whitman, even the ones that came before me.
Charles Ives, Ralph Vaughan Williams, Kurt Vile, Jennifer Higdon, Fred Hirsch, and many others have set Whitman poems. But perhaps no one has felt the pull more powerfully than Ned Roram.
Whitman is not evasive. Therefore, what he says is clear and can be imparted through the sung voice. Not all poets wear their heart on their sleeve, but he does, but without embarrassment to us.
It's astonishing when somebody has something really, really, really serious and deep to say. They don't say it in florid language. They say it in absolutely direct English.
Composer John Adams thinks of Whitman as an artistic model, despite the poet's shortcomings.
We find vulgarity. We find embarrassing stuff in Whitman that's just so bad, sentimental and, pulling the heartstrings. And then we find just the greatest moments in American literature. It's the real thing. And to me, that's a great inspiration.
John Adams and Ned Roram from the WNYC documentary airing Thursday called Walt Whitman's Song of Myself. Karen Carpenter, John Adams talking about pulling the really sentimental stuff goes back to what you were saying before about the heart songs that were popular in his day.
Right. Whitman puts himself out there, and it's really true that some of it borders on the cheesy, but gosh, I love the cheesy. And actually, it makes for great pop music. A lot of pop musicians have kind of relied on that really bombastic spirit of Whitman's.
In that sense, it's a little surprising that much of the musical settings of Whitman over the years have been classical and not pop settings.
Mm.
Now, Fred Hirsch, jazz pianist and composer, has recently set some of Leaves of Grass. Do you think Whitman is particularly well-suited to jazz?
I love what Fred Hirsch did. I heard that premiere, and I think that there's a free-form feeling to Whitman's lines that matches well with the spirit of freeform jazz. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Whitman is writing something that he hopes can be translated into any American voice or mode. So as well as it fits into the jazz, I think also the classical musicians have done wonderful things with them. And there have been pop settings. I mean, Madonna actually famously set some Whitman, and Woody Guthrie also wrote a poem entitled Walt Whitman's Niece, recently set to music by Wilco and Billy Bragg. Okay. So there's been all over the place different types of musicians reacting to the musicality of Whitman's line.
Well, Ned Roram, we heard in that clip saying, you know, Walt Whitman belongs to me. Walt Whitman belongs to a lot of people, but he really...
I want him.
Well, he really belongs to Lower Manhattan and the downtown area of Brooklyn in a big way. And you, Karen, have been co-curating this exhibition at the South Street Seaport, which is up through the end of the year, correct?
Yes, it is.
It's called Walt Whitman and the Promise of Democracy, 1855 to 2005. We're celebrating this year the 150th anniversary of Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. WNYC's hour-long special, Walt Whitman, Song of Myself, airs on Thursday, 9 a.m. on AM 820 and 3 p.m. right after soundcheck on 93.9. There are additional airings on Saturday and Sunday. Details on our website at WNYC.org. My guest has been Karen Carboner. Karen, thanks very much. We'll hear more from you during the course of this hour-long special as well, but thanks for being with us this afternoon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Soundcheck.
For reasons of their own,
from Fred Hirsch's setting of Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. That'll do it for today's sound check. Tomorrow on the program, we get ready for Thanksgiving by talking about music we're thankful for. Writer Anthony DeCurtis joins us, and we'll want to hear from you as well. Email us with the songs that you're thankful for and tell us why. We're at soundcheck@WNYC.org. Also tomorrow, Natalia Zuckerman joins us. She comes from a famous classical music family, but her own music is a mix of jazz and folk. She'll perform live in the studio with singer-songwriter Melissa Farrick. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Allison Lichter and Brian Wise. Our senior producer is Gisele Regatau. Our executive producer is Elena Park. I'm John Schaefer. Join us again at this time tomorrow for the next Soundcheck here on New York Public Radio.